This episode is brought to you by MPB. Get cash for the kit you're not using or trade it in for the gear you want at MPB.com. In this interview, I'm speaking with Elia Locardi. We're going to be talking about getting yourself back into photography.
This is TWIP.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, I have the honor of sitting down with Elia Locardi. Elia is, he is the quintessential photographer. He's one of the photographers that a lot of us wish we were, traveling the world, amazing portfolio of work. He knows his way around a camera or two, as we're going to discover in this interview. There's so many things I can speak, I can talk to Elia about, but one of the things we discussed in kind of the pre-interview, the green room, was let's focus this on the topic at hand, which is getting back into photography. If you've kind of taken a break from your photography for whatever reasons, you know, you want to dive back into it, and you're feeling a little intimidated. What are some ways that you could overcome that intimidation? So, Elia, welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. It's good to be back. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't tell people that the green room was an hour and a half and we forgot to hit record.
It totally was. That's how it happens with us, right? We were talking, but in our defense, we were talking about everything from the Marvel Cinematic Universe to Black Mirror to Invincible to all kinds of stuff, right?
So, and then like all about marketing too, which is just wild to go from like high level marketing to you know, cartoons.
No, absolutely. Yeah, animation, not cartoons, Elia. Animation.
Well, I call them cartoons because I just prefer to tell people I'm watching cartoons. Like, what are you doing? I'm watching cartoon. What are you doing? I'm watching a well-articulated animated series. It's like, it's just not, it sounds too good. You don't want to give people the impression that you watch good stuff.
Yeah, I still haven't figured out what the difference between a cartoon, animation, anime, manga, you know, what's the difference between all these things? I'm sure somebody will tell me on social media or in the comments, but they're all drawings that are animated, right?
You've set yourself up for a lot of comments, probably.
I'm in trouble. It's all the same, people. It's all the same. Well, cool, man. Let's dive in. So for the folks that may not know, may not be familiar with Elia Locardi, who are you and what do you do? I kind of spilled the beans a little bit. You're a travel photographer and you know your way around the world. But for the folks that have just met you, how would you explain yourself to them?
I would say that I am an aspiring travel photographer now because we've all been home for so long. Yeah. So, you know, previous to our homestay, I was on the road for probably about 12 years. And I visited 70 countries, flew a few million miles, and photographed a lot of stuff to the point where I have too many hard drives and cold storage that I need to go through. it's been really interesting. But yeah, mostly it was travel photography. And I think when I got started, it was sort of based on this idea that we always see the world in a different way. And at the time, it was sort of before social media, before mainstream social media or public social media, Twitter, Flickr, things like that. And it just kind of felt like I'd seen everything in National Geographic and been inspired by it. And I was talking to people. They're like, yeah, you know, there's really nothing left to do. There's nothing left to photograph. There's nothing left to do. And my counter argument to that was, I think everybody says that at every point of history, like that's it. And there's nothing left to do. And then you never hear from that person again, right? Because somebody takes it to the next level. So I wanted to do something different. I didn't know what that was. And I just kind of set out to do it. And my wife and I, we basically sold everything that we own to buy the gear we need. And then we spent 5 years from 2012 to 2017 location independent, which is, again, it's labeling homelessness, kind of like, you know, anime as cartoons. I mean, it was basically being homeless and traveling around the world without a home base and the expenses that incurs. So yeah. I just kind of started shooting things, figuring it out, and applying all of the years that I had from motion design and Photoshop and all that kind of stuff, and just sort of learning and discovering the world and producing work. And that sort of evolved over time. And it's one of those things that I constantly reevaluate. And I constantly try to not reinvent myself, but make sure that I approach everything with that same curiosity. You know, 15 years ago when I thought like, I'd love to travel the world, I wasn't thinking like, I'd love to travel the world and then have this conversation with Frederick 15 years later, you know, about how I traveled the world. I'm thinking, oh man, this is going to be amazing. And I don't know what's going to happen. So, you know, this is kind of where my mindset was then and where it is now, which is kind of interesting to be at a point where I'm kind of letting go of any expectations and just trying to create art again, because things have changed. I don't know if anybody noticed, but, been a bit of a year.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Things have shifted a little bit, which is interesting, right? Because this is a selfish interview, right? Because these questions I'm asking for myself, right? So, and I'm my audience, right? So, you know, I look at this, the world as it starts to thaw out in many areas, not all areas, but I look at that and I'm thinking, yeah, we've been on lockdown. My wings have been clipped. I have this weird desire to just want to freaking go someplace, right? I just want to go. I don't care where it is. I'm in California. And I'm like, there are a gazillion places in California I haven't been that are a $67 Southwest ticket away. Why don't I just drop my finger on a map and just go to some random town and bring my camera and maybe a drone or something and just go shoot? Is that a viable kind of way to get back, or is that like throwing the baby into the pool, you know, or should I tiptoe and maybe go shoot around my neighborhood? What do you think? Like, for the people that are listening in the same boat.
First of all, you lost me at Southwest. You already like lost me. I'm like, no, that's a deal breaker right there.
Well, Virgin is gone, so it's Southwest. Come
on. That's true. You're a little bit more, I don't know.
I'm risk averse.
For the price, you know, it works. So that's a really good question. I think we've been challenged with that as creative. So as someone who spent most of his life trying to get away from his home as far as possible, I mean, I literally use like the map tunneling tool on the internet and was like, what's the farthest thing away from Florida? And it turned out to be in the middle of the ocean. So it wasn't going to work. It was like, well, you know, it's like 10,000-11,000 miles away is Singapore, Southeast Asia. So I'm like, I'm going to go there, you know, I'm just going to go as far away as possible. And then everything's going to be great, you know, and what's interesting is like, everything's different. So it stimulates you. And I think that's the key is being stimulated. And we have this issue of treating things close to home as uninteresting. Yeah. I remember when I went to Stockholm for the first time, 2012, was actually when we invented location independence over coffee. We invented it there. And I was like reading these articles before, and Naomi found these articles too about the subway system. And that there's like this one that there's just like art. And the T-Bana system is like this, you know, open air. Well, it's not open air, very closed air cave museum, but it's pretty. And now everybody knows the escalator to hell, or that shot in the Stockholm Metro. But when I shot it, it wasn't really anywhere, you know. I mean, we found this obscure article about it, and I remember shooting it, and I was shooting it at night, you know, like midnight when nobody was there, and people walking by, they're like, what the heck are you doing, you know? And Swedish people, like, they can speak English without an accent, you know. Like, oh, you're from the United States? No, I'm from Sweden. It's like, oh, okay. But they're like, what are you doing here? What are you shooting? I'm like, well, this looks like kind of a thing. And they're like, no, that's just an escalator. Like, there's nothing to it. So they go and use this route all the time. You know, it's nothing for them. But for me, I traveled all the way to Sweden and Stockholm and took a photo of a metro station. And then that photo went viral because nobody really knew it existed. So it doesn't have to be anything extraordinary. It just has to be different to us. So the key now, if you're going to go somewhere close to yourself, is you have to reassess that value and really look at something with that same creative mind. If somebody, and you see people traveling to where you live and taking out their cameras, and you're like, what are they photographing? It's just a bridge, or it's just this. You have to kind of see your own area with those eyes, those fresh eyes. And I think that's sort of the key, you know, like, and that's where I've been challenging myself. I feel bad that I haven't gone out for a while to shoot sunset. You know, it's really pretty. There's a bunch of piers, you know, there's bird life. It's hard. And I think people are struggling with that. I think in California, like, and then you're automatically envious, right? Like, I'm like, oh, well, Frederick's in California. If I was in California, you know, I'd go everywhere. And you're like, man, I'm going to Florida next week. Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm going to bring the camera. I'm like, going to St. Petersburg, Florida. You know, I'm like, hmm. So it's this, you have to really kind of think about allowing yourself to, whether you call it the beginner's mind, whether you call it, you know, putting yourself in someone's shoes or thinking with somebody else's eyes or fresh eyes, that's where we're at right now. You know, we have to kind of reassess it. And what I'm finding is some of the things closer to home probably would have given me the same result professionally, but maybe not emotionally. And I think that the travel part of that is something where we see it, you know, whether we're following Instagrammers or photographers, whatever, I mean, that's it. You know, it's like, we're going somewhere, that going somewhere. So if you can have that feeling at home, you're going to create great work, but it's not easy.
That's the hard part though, right? A lot of it's, you hit it right on the head. Like I'm in the Bay Area, kind of in the Bay Area, right? So about an hour, maybe less than 2 hours away from me, there's Yosemite, there's Napa, Sonoma, there's San Francisco, there's Oakland. You know, I could jump on a plane and be in Vegas pretty quickly. So there's all these different, Death Valley, LA, so, you know, there's all these different areas that are relatively close to me. And then in my own little neighborhood here, there's windmills and all kinds of things to photograph. But like, for example, if I go look at the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, the thing that pops into my head when I look at the Golden Gate Bridge is this thing has been photographed from every conceivable angle already. What could I possibly bring to the table? So it kind of deflates the umbrella or the balloon of creativity when you feel like someone has probably stood exactly with their feet in the where my feet are sitting with the lens focal length that I have and maybe taken a better picture than I could do. Do I really want to do that? I want to do something that someone hasn't done before. So you have that kind of overhead of, you know, can I do something different? But the travel piece pops in where even if it's a random little Western town, you know, a dirt road Western town in California, it still feels different, right? It feels like you're out of your environment, and the fact that it's temporary, like you're only going to be there for a day or 2 days. It adds a little special seasoning on your creativity of like, okay, I may not ever come back to this place in my life, so I need to do something versus, say, the Golden Gate Bridge, which is amazing looking, but it's always there. You know, I can go there tomorrow. It's always there. So how do you combat that piece of it as a traveling, you know, photographer?
Well, you hit it on the head there, too. Well, you have to think about it this way, too. And this is where I have mostly failed while I've been here. There's unique challenges with photographing something that's been photographed a million times. I mean, I've been to the Golden Gate and I photographed it. It's really cool. But what is it? Slacker Hill, right? Like, is that sort of where I think where I went, and it's called Slacker Hill. And you can walk around. There's some trees. There are a lot of things you can do, right? But yeah, for the most part, we've seen it. We've seen it with fog. We've seen it with stars. We've seen it with pretty much everything. But what's cool about that is when you can familiarize yourself with a location, the more you do, the more creative you get. And I think that's really the key to sustainable travel photography or professional travel photography. It's, yeah, we do go to get that hero shot because we need those hero shots for marketing. It's so important. But it's all of those other shots that matter the most. And you have to be able to see things, you know, one, in a way that not necessarily other people aren't seeing, but you have to be comfortable with it enough to not just see the portfolio shot, which you've seen, you know. So the one is to try to limit the amount of things that you research on it and try to explore and give yourself more time. So it's curiosity and exploration that's going to give you a unique perspective, even if it ends up being something that's been done, because you're right, you physically can occupy any space and now we have drones, but it's still your idea. And I think that the more you go back to somewhere, and it's like with Rome is that way for me, because I spent so much time staying with my uncle because it was free and I knew the buses and I could take the bus. So I knew the bridges and I know those areas, and I just practiced and went there just to go, you know, drink wine, shoot things. And so I'm so familiar with these things. I started to notice all these little details and all these little things and how it looks when it's flooded and how it looks when, you know, I even now I just saw a photo of it. I'm like, man, there's another tree there. There's all these things. Like, you start to notice these things that most people who just come to visit, like you said, it's temporary, they don't get to discover. And sometimes that's what makes the shot. And that's important to understand. So familiarity is not a bad thing. It can actually be a better thing. You can produce better results. The problem, like you said, though, is you feel like it's always there. Mm-hmm. But we know now that, you know, again, it's been an interesting year. Things aren't always there. So I think in the back of your mind, you're still thinking too, Frederick, you're like, is it really going to be there? Earthquakes, mm-hmm. You don't know. You know, things are crumbling, rocks are falling, things are changing. And that's kind of where I'm at. I'm thinking, okay, yeah, we have hurricanes. And the more I put this off because I think it's so comfortable and permanent, the more sorry I'm going to be when it's gone. Or that's right. I feel like I missed an opportunity, or they built a fence around it, or they did all of these things. So you can't get yourself into a mindset where you can just feel like you can do it later. That's what I did, you know. Mm-hmm. But you're right, it's never going to have the same excitement level. But what can I say about travel photography is the way the Instagrammers do it, it looks exciting. Like they're really, you know, having that glass of wine and that infinity edge pool in Ubud. Yeah. And they are for that, you know, 3 hours it takes them to get that shot. Well, we know the stories of what goes into this. And I think that's really it. You know, for every, portfolio hero shot that you see, you're not seeing the hundreds or dozens of, not, it's not like they're horrible, but they're usable shots for marketing. You know, we're shooting extra things, we're shooting different things. It might not be exactly what I wanted, and certainly trying to get that wow factor shot, but you have to be able to see things, even in the things that are the most mundane to you. Mm-hmm. And that's the lesson, you know, and that's where your backyard can become, literally, when you say it's like, well, it's my backyard, I know it, you know, it's like the back of my hand. You have an advantage, you have the home field advantage. You just have to make yourself, you know, use it. And I'm failing at that. So I'm giving you advice, and then I'm like saying I haven't been able to do it. So it's easier said than done.
Isn't that always the way, though, Elijah? That's always the way. You know, it's so interesting because I look at this stuff and I think, you know, you want to go out and you want to shoot, but and you want to experience different things, like Rome, like you said. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? I remember a discussion that we had in an interview we did early on, maybe a year or so, maybe a little bit more than a year ago. You and I were talking about, or you were telling me this story about this place, I think it was in China or Japan or someplace, this garden that was not very well trafficked, and you were able to do some photos there, and it became popular maybe because of the photos or for some other reasons, and now it's overrun with tourists and not the same place again. Do you recall that?
That's the Chareda Pagoda. You'll see the pagoda, the red pagoda on the right, Mount Fuji in the background, and cherry blossoms or fall colors in the foreground. Yeah, it wasn't my discovery, but it was, I found something like that looked like a drawing or a picture, a thumbnail, and my friends had kind of turned me onto that years ago because nobody could figure out where it was and if it existed. And my friend lived in the town. He's like, no, that's in our town. We just built it. It was not a place that anybody went except for locals, you know, like most of the places that are like a bunch of steps to get to. And it was like, I think it's like 150, 200 steps to get to that part. And then there's the mountain area and, you know, every step is a blessing. Mm-hmm. That's what they say, you know, but it was empty for years, and now it's a tourist attraction, but it deserves to be, because that was at the time I was really into the idea of, if you look at something, it should say what it is. And mm-hmm. and that was an example where you don't have to think too hard about that. You're like, that's Japan. You have Mount Fuji, you have cherry blossoms, you have a Japanese style pagoda, even though it's new. Yuriki doesn't look new. And it has all of these representations of Japan in a single photograph. And, you know, that was, I spent a couple of years trying to get that just right. But that's a good example. A lot of the natural arches are falling, different things like that change. That I think is probably before everything, like you said, froze, you know, because we're thawing mm-hmm. out. That was the biggest challenge I had, was managing the amount of tourists. And, you know, we're tourists, like everybody's a tourist who's not from there. But it was wild, you know. It was right around 2013 to 2015 when we started seeing the masses of tourism, the Chinese tourism, everybody all over the world. It's not just the Chinese coming there, massive buses, you know, Iceland's just overrun with people. And at the beginning it was okay because nobody was getting up at 5 a.m., you know, and then in Iceland, it's like nobody was going in the wintertime. And Norway, nobody was going in the wintertime. Nobody was going this time. And then after a few years, it was like winter became a destination. People would get up in the morning. The buses figured out that if they go in the morning, then they'll be able to give people an exclusive experience. It's empty. Well, not really. I mean, empty with your 60 people you don't know. But it changed. And it was wild to me. And I think that that's kind of neat right now if you think about it. So everybody says and everybody thinks that travel would have been better if I started 20 years ago. I talk to people like, oh, it was there in the 70s and the 60s. And it was like this. And I'm like, man, that would have been so cool to experience that back then. And we tend to devalue because things become modern. And certainly gift shops, tourists, you know, the people selling stuff, whatever, the mini Eiffel Towers or whatever, you know, it does not really paint a classic picture of things. Mm-hmm. But we have to think about it in terms of what is somebody going to say 20 years from now? They're going to be like, wow, you had the experience of a lifetime that has changed so much. And I think that now, no matter what age we are, having, you know, all kind of gone through this together in some way, we've seen rapid change and uncertainty. And we've kind of applied that to the what if of everything. So mm-hmm. for travel and stimulation, now that everything is thawing out, there's this unique opportunity. If you are going to travel, if you want to manage some of the restrictions or there's hoops and things that you have to jump through or tests that you have to take, you will largely experience the world the way it was before mega modern tourism. And that's mm-hmm. something that I never expected to see again. You know, I never expected the idea of if I fly to Florence or Venice right now, there are only a few cruise ships there. You know, it's not 15, you know, yeah. It's going to be so manageable during the day, which I haven't been able to experience for 10 years. So I'm thinking about that, and maybe not even in the terms of photographing it, just to get to experience a place where I don't have to plan my entire day around the traffic of people. That's pretty cool. And then that's yeah. getting back to like the people who did it 20, 30 years ago when there weren't, well, there were tourists, but it wasn't as easy, you know? And that's an interesting, and it's this incentive now, if you want to travel, this is something to think about. It is a little bit more of a hassle. You know, it's tough with the flights. If you look at it, they are booked up for the most part, but you get a unique experience again. Mm-hmm. And you really do. For now, right.
You know, what's interesting about that is, you know, you're the perfect person to ask this question to, and that's the idea of when people are going on these adventures, like we say, as the world is thawing out and, you know, people are getting out and about again, especially photographers that want to get out and about and start taking photos again. Should people, in your opinion, be shooting for the memory card or for their own memory? Right.
So we have, that's a really good question. We have a term that we actually call memory photos. And that's kind of like, I'll look through my photos on my iPhone because I'm usually shooting my daughter on my iPhone. And that's mm-hmm. certainly changed a lot of things for me, obviously being a parent. But these are the things that you take out and show people more often than your portfolio. You know, here's the photos, you know, at the barbecue, here's all the photos in between me obsessing about getting a great photo on my real camera. And I think that that's really important to do both. So the majority of the photos will end up being memory photos. And I actually like that term. And in Southeast and East Asia, they're really good at coming up with terms like that. Like they're like, oh, yeah, memory photos. Because I described it, I'm like, you know, those photos that you don't really keep in your portfolio, but you show everybody, yeah, memory photos, we shoot those all the time. Mm-hmm. So this is really important. It can be both. And I think that we lose that if we're only thinking about generating portfolio work, whether it's you're creating NFTs, trying to get to the front page of 500px or client, whatever you're trying to do, there's a lot of pressure. But the memory photos don't have any pressure. We're not, well, maybe we are. I obsess with the vertical lines in my iPhone, but I know that it doesn't have to be perfect because I'm just like, man, this was so cool. Or I'm taking detail photos of something that I think is a cool texture, or, you know, the deer in Nara, or, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, you know, and this is the reason that most people travel, you know, and I think that that's a good way. If we get too serious in our photography, we should always look back at what we shot about on the iPhone, because at that point we cut all expectations off, right? We don't have an expectation for this being shared on National Geographic social media, you know, it's right. Just, that was really a cool texture on that statue with moss on, you know, but we were excited about it. That made us excited. And then we didn't think about quality. We didn't think about too much, and we just captured it. You know, so that if you can take that and apply that to everything, then, you know, that's the best of both, right? That's the curious traveler and the person who could, you know, set their tripod up and do it right too, if they really wanted
to. Right. Yeah. Why do you have to separate one from the other? Like you could enjoy taking photos of, say, your meal at a Parisian restaurant or something.
Yes.
And also enjoy the meal. Right.
And this is it. You know, are you going to post it to your Instagram? Probably not. Well, maybe you are, and if there's nothing wrong with that, I don't want to make the comments even worse than that anime thing he did.
You said it.
I did. No. I'm going to type in your phone number right now. Just text him anything that you really
have. Just text me. Yeah, 310 now. Okay, so here's another question I want to throw out at you. So when you say we're on this hypothetical trip, let's say it's to Georgia, right? You know, not the Georgia here in the U.S., the Georgia over there by Russia, right? So
it's on my list, actually. It's one of my favorite places.
Yeah, I have a friend that's traveling there right now. He's there right now, which is why it's top of mind. So I'm thinking, I don't know if they're hit by the floods or not, but I'm thinking if someone were to say, okay, Elia, you're going to Georgia tomorrow, what happens from then? Now let's put some parameters on it. This is not a commercial assignment. This is just, you got a free trip to Georgia, you got some free time, you got a place to stay, you're going to be there for 3 days, you know, 2 travel days, bookending that. What do you bring with you? Like, camera-wise, clothes-wise, what does that look like? If you're leaving tomorrow morning to go to Georgia, what happens after we get off the call right now?
Well, that's actually a good question. So it's... having such little time, you're gonna fly into Tbilisi, and that's gonna, I mean, it's cool. There are some things to shoot there. I think that what I do is probably use it as a initial experience or transition into planning the next one, because if it's paid for, so in that world, yeah, you win a contest and they fly you in and you get 3 days at the spa in Tbilisi and you can go see the sights and everything. And that's great. You know, I would bring the camera and the tripod because you're going to have a couple sunsets and sunrises and there's architecture. It's a really neat city. I haven't been yet. Thanks for reminding me. But it, you know, there's enough to do. But what I'd also do is I'd meet with some local contacts there. Like I know people in different companies like that I have been wanting to go and talk to people. So from a networking standpoint, and this is just pure, you know, business side networking, I'd say that's friends and colleagues and everything. I'd meet and everybody that I want to meet in person there, and I'd sort of run my ideas by them, because what I'll do, and by I'll do, I mean, I'll get Naomi to do, because she does a better job of it, is figure out the logistics of how to get from place to place. If I want to go to the monasteries and the mountains or it's all these things, usually we'll do a pretty good job. But if you talk to somebody local, they're going to be like, oh, you could do it this way, or I do this first, or that's a bad idea because it's going to be busy, or that's an Orthodox holiday, or, you know what I mean? Like, you can actually start to really learn a lot about it. And, you know, and when you take the expectation, that's the hard thing. I learned a long time ago that if I just have a day or two in a place, I will not do that. I'm going to breakneck speed, see everything for 5 minutes and just go everywhere and run myself ragged. I'll try to just enjoy the things that I might have missed out if I did that. So the cultural stuff, the museums in Tbilisi, the people, the cuisine, and then maybe like I'll get a lot of information and also inspiration and other ideas that I wouldn't have had just talking to people while I'm outside of the country. Mm-hmm. So that's unique to me. But if you're there, that's the thing. Don't try to fill it with quantity. You know, unless the doctor gives you like 2 weeks to live, then, you know, just go, don't sleep, just get it all done. Just try to focus on a couple things. Like, and that's really where, if I only have a day, 2 days, half a day, I'll focus on those big iconic shots. You know, like I'll be like, I want a city with the mountains. I want this. And I'll really try to get a couple things. And I won't say I'm going to get 10, 15 portfolio pieces. If I get one, I'll be happy. And then I'll also have all the memory photos, because I know that in the middle time, I'm not going to spend time working on the, you know, on Zoom and all these other things. I'm just going to go out and I'm going to walk around. I'm going to, you know, take taxis to different places. I'm going to get recommendations from people. I'm going to meet people when I'm out, you know, drinking at the bar, and then they're going to say, go here. And that's really what I do. And I feel like, I don't know if I do it well. All the best times, the most successful times, is too much alcohol and I don't remember. I guess it was successful. Is that networking? Is that applying that same curiosity to this place? And what's cool is, again, you're an outsider. It's very foreign for most people. Very exotic. Wrong word. it's unfamiliar or familiar, but new and inspirational. There are a lot of ways where you can be stimulated by this, this culture, the people, the history, the food, whatever it is, you know, it's just, it's a very cool place. So you get to apply that, level of curiosity and excitement to somebody who's been there for a long time. And when somebody comes here, hint, hint, if you want to drive over to the Better Coast, you come here and you're like, what is there to photograph? I'll be like, well, there are like 10 things and I'll get excited, even though I'm not excited. But then I'm excited because you made me excited. So I'll go there and I'll make everybody else excited. And they'll be like, you know what? When you come next time, I'm going to take you to this place that nobody knows about and we're going to do this. And I find that it usually takes me a couple of visits before I get to those places that I really intended to get. I just didn't know it at the time, you know, because again, there are a lot of great photos of everywhere and they tend to be in the same spot, but it's just because that's the easy thing. And most people don't go for very long. You start repeating things, then you can get comfortable with that place. And it's no different than how comfortable you can be with your own home. It's just that is exciting because it's new. You're learning something new every time you go. It's different.
It's different. You know, and the other part of that is it's all about me, Elias. So I'm bringing it back to me again. So when I
still like you for some reason. It's like, no, I talk to him and then I feel better about myself. It's like, I'm a pretty good person compared to him.
Exactly. He's so self-centered and he's bad ideas about anime. but you know, when you think about gear on a trip like this, the knee jerk reaction for a lot of, let's say advanced amateur and amateur photographers is to, crap, I'm going to Georgia. I don't know what's going to happen there. You know, let's assume they haven't researched and they haven't done what you're recommending and kind of making sure they hit the hot spots and all that. But if, you know, the part, kind of the knee-jerk reaction would be, I got to bring everything with me. I need these 5 lenses. I need 2 camera bodies because what if one fails? You know, there might be some good aerials there. I need to bring my drone too, maybe some 360 stuff. Let me grab the 360 camera, bring that along and on and on and on. I need batteries for all this stuff and chargers. Should I bring my laptop too? Yeah, because I might want to stream and edit while I'm in the hotel room. Laptop's in the bag. Oh, I may want to read at a cafe. Let me throw my iPad in the bag too. Now I need clothes, you know, and pretty soon you're just overloaded. From you, the intentional homeless guy, right, that traveled the world, I'm assuming efficiently, what's the best way to do that to avoid that overload and having that Charlie Brown backpack full of gear?
Well, it depends on the mentality of I want to be able to capture anything that I could possibly imagine in any way that I could possibly imagine versus the reality of the locations that I'm going to be going to. So what I learned was that the more you do something, the worse you get at it sometimes. It's the weirdest thing. Like you start you know, it's like, okay, like 15 years of travel and you know, I'm a master of travel. It's like, no, I stopped paying attention to things that are important and then I miss shit. And it's like, we'll land. Naomi would be like, what hotel we're staying at? And I'm like, oh, I didn't book anything. You didn't book anything. I was like, well, I was going to do it at the, all right, well, I'll book something when we land, you know? And so for me, you know, spontaneity is a little bit more important, or planned spontaneity we have. I can talk about all those controlled variables and stuff, but I'm just thinking about that. I've done that so many times.
What landed someplace? You're like, we don't know where we're staying. That's like the worst nightmare to me.
I don't ever really know. I mean, I booked it, but I don't have it all figured out. You know, I'll just like figure it out when I get there, show an address.
How do you do that? Like that just tap dances on my OCD vein, right? Because when I get on a plane, like even when I get in the the car to go to the airport, I feel like I have to know where my bags are going to be that night. And James Bond
since
here.
I took us out of that question. Let me see if I can answer this one and answer the other one.
Okay, yeah, bring us back.
Because the gear thing. Yeah, so there's a embracing the random is something that can be done really well. Like it doesn't mean that I don't know the area. Usually it's areas that I've been, you know, if I'm going to Istanbul for something and I don't really worry about it, I'll just know where I'm staying and then I'll make sure I have the address. And now we land and we have data. And you know, it was different 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And I'm saying, you know, back in my day, we had paper maps instead of Google Maps, but we did. We had freaking paper maps. You get a paper map in Tokyo. And I'm like, the hell do I do this? Oh, that's the subway. Whoa, that doesn't include the trains or these trains or the monorail, and then like all the layers. And I'm like, do you have an English one? No, but you know, go here, walk here. That was an adventure. And I think that taught me a lot. There's practice and spontaneity, right? Like I'm just throwing myself into dangerous situations, but I'm confident in my abilities to figure things out. And the more you travel, the more comfortable you get everywhere in the world. Things change, and you adapt, and you can kind of fit in. You understand the way things work. You know, when you land in your hometown, you don't really think too much about everything that you do. And once you get somewhere, once you learn that place, then it's largely the same. And it doesn't mean that I won't plan, but it's just a different mentality. Type A and type B, like, and that's why my wife and I work so well together. So it's similar to the gear stuff, you know, and I think that's what's hard is, even if you plan everything out, it always comes down to, do I need that 24 to 70? Or I'm sorry, do I need that 70 to 200? Do I need that telephoto lens? And it sucks because every time I try to use a smaller camera bag, and for a while I got a really small camera bag, but I limited, you know, I'm taking one wide angle, one medium, and that's it. And then like, I'm not going to shoot any telephoto. And usually I'd be happy with that, but the very practical me thinking, as we all do, that I'm going to have all these opportunities to get all these crazy shots, mm-hmm. I'd rather have something than not have something. And
yep.
It's one of those things that you can never really master. So what I did is I started to think of it as everything that I bring versus everything that I take out. So if I was going to go shoot one thing or one place a day, which is very realistic for me, one or two, and I can go back to the hotel in between or wherever, I don't need to take everything. So what I do is I take the smaller bag in my suitcase. It's like a day bag, a camera bag, right? My ideal, if everything was perfect, this is what I travel with all the time. And then I load everything into the bigger bag and take it if I need it. Mm-hmm. And then depending on where I'm going, I pack what I need. So I get things there and then I convert it into what I need for the day. So I'm not hauling everything around. That's a pretty good solution if you can find a sort of a day or a 2 day bag. Another thing that's kind of cool in the hotels, like if you stay somewhere, say you're going to go to Thailand, you're going to go all through the north, but you're going to start in Bangkok and then you're going to end in Bangkok. We're going to spend probably 24 hours there. So what you can do is you can book a hotel for that 24 hours and then book it 2 weeks later. So you show the two bookings. When you get there, when you leave, you can store a bag. So you can store some of your stuff and then be lighter and more agile. So that's the trick. So you have to kind of plan for that. And you know, I have all these bags that kind of collapse into nothing. And then I can make another bag if I have to check a second bag. It's a little bit more planning, but I don't think anybody's capable of just leaving everything behind. Because if you're shooting, if you decide like, I'm only going to shoot 85 millimeter portraits of people on the street, that's pretty cool. Like you can just do that. But for landscape photography, and you just like can't even discount the need for a telephoto. You might need it. And then when you shoot the wide angle, you might want to do detail shots. And it's never easy to call that stuff. And then filters, you know, mm-hmm. you got to get it down to like 10 stop. And do you really need the grad? Probably not. You're doing video? Yes. Like, it never ends, to be honest. And then, yeah, the drone. Thankfully, they're very small and compact. I have to hand it to DJI. It's changed a lot. To be able to have like a small, powerful, you know, complete video solution that takes up the place of one lens. I mean, that's
right. Right,
I don't complain
about
taking the drone. Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and that the safety part of it, I think, is where you know, myself and a lot of people get tripped up at, because you want to bring all that stuff with you, like you say. And yeah, I think of it like, you know, you have your battleship back in the hotel room, and then you have your away team, you know, that takes just what you need for the mission for that day, and then you go back and, you know, reassess. But what happens to the battleship when you're out? Like you touched on it, but if, you know, if you got this bag with $40,000 worth of gear sitting in your room in a country where $40,000 represents a lifetime income, you know, there's dynamics at play there. What if someone follows you back and they see this foreigner shooting with this expensive gear? There may be more back at the room. Let's go get them. How do you, you know, there's the fear part of that. Like, okay, I'm just not going to go anywhere because I don't, you know, there may be bad people there that are going to do evil things. Or do you just throw caution to the wind and say, hey, YOLO, I'm going out, I'm going to do my photography and nothing's going to happen. And if it does, I'll deal with it. How do you reconcile that?
Well, there's kind of a saying that if you want to get a new camera, you know, get insurance and then visit Rome. You know, it's
going away, right?
Yeah, I mean, this dark alley looks dodgy. Don't go down it. But the there are a couple ways to do that, and yeah, we definitely try to use the safe. So you can utilize the safe to put some stuff in, and then if it's one of the small ones, you'd actually just hide things in the room. It's very you know, Michael Crichton spy, you know, thing. Like you take a roof tile off, or you don't have to get that creative, but you can just slide stuff under it, like between the mattress and the box spring. You can put your laptop and stuff there. Also, if I was in places where I was questionable and to doing that in China and leaving your stuff there, not that it's going to be a problem. You never know, right? And most of the places that are tourist oriented, they don't want theft, because that's going to give them, I mean, one theft is going to ruin their review. So they really don't want that to happen. Islands in Greece, like that's their whole reputation. Like anybody who steals is getting booted off the island. It's like that one guy on Survivor that just goes, you know, like he's gone right away. But you can use something like a pack safe. I don't know if you've seen those.
No.
It's like a wire grid. Like it's not chicken wire. It's like really, you have to get it bolt cutters to get through it. And it comes with a lock, and they make it the size, they make bags, but they make it the size of camera bags, the size of rollers, the sides of things. So if you're worried about that, you can take the light backpack, right, with the gear, and then take the rest of it in a roller or another bag on the plane and get a pack safe that'll fit over that, you know, that approved roller board size. Mm-hmm. Then it has like a tether cord that you can wrap around stuff and lock. So what I'd actually do is I'd put everything in there, put the mesh on it, crank that down and lock it. And then I'd wrap it through the hinges on the door, on like the, you know, and then lock it, you know? And so anybody who came in there, like for smash and grab, like would not be able to do it. They're not going to get it. They're not going to be able to break it off. You know, somebody would have to work there. It would take a lot. So we'd lock the bags up in places that were questionable like that. So that's a very doable thing. The one thing I advise against is, unless you're in Iceland or Japan or somewhere where this just doesn't happen, you know, I mean, you're in California, you just don't leave your stuff in the car, right? No, like never, ever, ever leave your stuff in the car before you go on a walk in any national park. So there are certain things in that regard. If you are going to go shoot, I make sure that I can at least drop stuff off at the hotel before I go somewhere if I'm going to have to hike. Or if we've, you know, done this with a group and we hire a guide, we usually just have, if we have a driver, we'll just ask him to stick around the car to watch everything, you know? So we're very cautious and we try to plan around it, but there certainly are some things like PackSafe and some other solutions like that, that you can secure your stuff. And, you know, it works really well. And honestly, it's got to look so weird to the cleaning staff, you know, like all of these like Fort Knox style bags that are lashed around different things and locked down, but it's true. You know, you have to protect that. Yeah. And Global Nomads and some other places, like you can get great travel insurance, but nobody wants to be in that situation.
Mm-mm. No. And that's the whole point. You know, one of the, and we'll wrap it up after this, but one of the things that I think about is one of the cities that's on my list, like Georgia is on your list, is Rio de Janeiro, like for carnival and all that. And then I think about it, I'm like, oh, that would just be a dream to go down there and shoot that. It just looks amazing. And just the sights and the colors and the sounds and all that. And then I also heard that, it's kind of like Rome, you know, when it comes to your camera gear, you know, you want to be careful and be smart about it. Any tips for that? Like if you're going to go to an area that you know that has a reputation for shoplifting or robbery or, you know, bad things like that, but yet you still want to go and get the photos, what's your advice to those folks?
Rio in particular, I think I've been three or four times. It was years and years and years ago. And I never felt comfortable enough to just walk around with my camera gear. Because it is a problem. And if you're staying in Ipanema or, you know, anywhere along the beach or basically anywhere, right? Like they tell you not to wear anything flashy, take your jewelry off, all those kind of things. You know, it's just the nature of it. So when you get there and you hear that and you're encouraged by the hotel and all that kind of stuff. And then we'll call a taxi just so that you don't get kidnapped or taken advantage of. Like, yeah, I mean, you don't want to hear that. It definitely doesn't play with your confidence. And mm-hmm. it was kind of heartbreaking to me driving around and seeing all these beautiful things. It was like, I can't come here by myself in the morning. I just, mm-hmm. I can't. Mm-hmm. And the solution is having local friends that can sort of buffer and be around you because they know better. They know, you know what I mean? It's getting to be where some of the tourist areas, again, there's security, there's things going on, but you really have to limit the amount of things. And it's good to sort of disguise it a little bit, because camera bags that look like camera bags, you don't want it to just be like scream, you know, expensive camera. And you don't want to be kind of flaunting that. So you have to be a little bit more discreet and blend in. But I think the best thing you can do is get somebody to go with you. And I know you can do that pretty easily with tours and stuff where they'll go. So you get like the sunset on Sugarloaf to be able to get that nice cityscape that everybody gets with mountains. And you're there with a group of people, you know, so then I'd say embrace the small tour group, because you're going to be, you know, there with a bunch of people and it's going to be a little bit more safe. But that's definitely the tricky situation. And I think Rio is one of those really interesting places that it's so beautiful and also so tricky in that regard. Mm-hmm. But it's somewhere that I'm ready to revisit sort of with the gear. And I think that what you can do is just always be conscious that it could happen. So when you're done shooting, just take your memory cards out just in case you lose the camera. Cause really what it comes down to is if you've been shooting, then the images are the most important thing. You know, if you've got images, so keep those memory cards somewhere else in a sock. They make these like chest and body sort of conform things that you can keep your money. And one of the funniest things that somebody told me in Rio, which actually people do, they're like, so when you get robbed, it's never like if you get robbed, right? They say when, you should have a dummy wallet. And it's the weirdest thing. Like you basically have like a wallet or two on you, and you put some money and some stuff, like put some old credit cards in there that don't work anymore or whatever. And then when somebody robs you, just you hand them that and then they take it and go. It's a dummy wallet and they're happy that they robbed you, and then you keep all your stuff. So if you keep dummy wallets on you, I've never had to do it, but I was like, I'm gonna make this. You should definitely be careful. And I think that you just have to accept the fact that it might happen. But what you really want to do in those situations, even if you think like you can accept everything gets stolen, you still don't want to go to a place that's notoriously dangerous by yourself. Like I have friends who are in the favelas and taking photos, but they're accepted by the community. They've done a lot of work before mm-hmm. they go in there with social outreach and stuff like that to be able to photograph and have access to those people and those stories. But just as a tourist walking around, I mean, it's like you have to kind of read the room. And I think that as a traveler, if you're from the city, if you're from New York, or I'm from South Florida, Miami is a crazy place. It's always been a crazy place. And you don't stop at red lights at night. You just know not to do that. So you kind of have to apply that same logic when you travel. You just don't put yourself in a situation where you know it's going to be bad. And 9 times out of 10, if something in the back of your head is telling you that this is a mistake and that something's going to go wrong, trust it. Trust it. Just go tomorrow. There have been so many times that I've gotten up in the morning and I was going to go walk somewhere, and I just decided this isn't the good time to do it. And then I've just stayed. So just, it's, you know, separating the paranoia from it, just think it through and trust your gut. But, you know, you also don't want it to limit you. So that would be one of the more difficult examples. But European cities and New York, you know, all you're fine. You know, you're really fine. Just really understand not to go down that dark alley or anything that feels weird. You know, you just have to kind of use that same street smarts or common sense that you have at home somewhere else. But you shouldn't just automatically assume that somewhere else is worse necessarily. You know, and I think a lot of people from the United States, like, you know, where's the scariest place you've ever been? I'm like, Newark, New Jersey. You know, like that really is freaked out trying to take the metro. It's there, the path train at 2 a.m. and it's not good, you know? Yeah. So after that, I mean, what is Rome at, you know, 2 a.m.? Like,
exactly. I'm from Chicago. Oh, yeah. So there's like, you know, it takes a lot to freak me out, but it also hones your self-preservation and kind of the instinct about, like you said, don't go down that alley and just don't be an idiot, right? Don't go into this place in this area at 2 a.m. It's probably not a good idea. Or like you said, slowing down for red lights or anything like that, you know? And you take those kinds of sensibilities to and kind of extrapolate out that, yeah, this planet is full of humans and some of them do stupid stuff, right? So
yeah, just, being curious, being, yeah, you know, excited and adventurous doesn't mean you have to be, you know, reckless and,
right,
and put yourself in danger. You know, there are two different sides to that. And I think that, you know, a lot of the photography, we see people like climbing to the top of the buildings and the daredevil stuff, you know, that's a whole different thing.
That's different.
Where that safety thing they're putting in the line. But a lot of the photographers, if you really want to watch people that are doing that, I mean, you see a lot of the photojournalism, that's happening in, you know, Pakistan and the Rohingya and in the West, Myanmar right now, you know, so these are the people that are putting themselves on the line every day and in danger to get these photos. And these photos aren't for their portfolio. They're so that these news stories gets out, you know? So this is a little different than us wanting to travel to Rio just to get some cool portfolio shots. You know, this is people risking their lives to help change the lives of people and get these stories out there. So I usually look to them for advice and, you know, kind of talk to them about how it actually is. And you know, they really inspire me. I have a lot of really good friends, I'm happy to call friends, that are out there changing the world. And it just reminds me, you know, that, you know, like, you know, take photos of pretty landscapes, you know, they got them pretty good compared to this safety thing. But just, you know, and that clarify your intentions, right? You're like, I'm going to put myself in danger just because I want to, you know, get a, you know, 100,000 likes on Instagram. It's probably not a great reason to do it. You know, you might want to reassess your values there.
But help,
you know, stop a genocide is probably a better reason than increasing your Instagram following.
you don't want on your tombstone to read, "He did it for the gram," right?
He did it for the gram. Yeah. Or like the obituary, he had a million Instagram followers. Like that's that's what you want to be remembered for. It's not that great, really.
Yeah. Well, what's next as we wrap this up? What's next for Elia? What's on the travel ticket? What's, you know, business wise? You always have something crazy going on. What's going on? What's happening for the rest of 2021?
I have a lot of things that aren't moving forward, not because I don't want them to, but because I'm kind of hesitant because there's so many ideas out there. And what I'm doing now is just kind of either thinking about the most ridiculous thing that I could do and then pitching it and see how it goes. Or I'm trying to sort of apply a beginner's mind to everything. And I think right now, a lot of us, hobbyist or professional, we're in this unique situation where we've been home a lot and maybe we put down the camera. It's kind of like, I grew up around the ocean, so I'm used to it. But even if I spend a year or two outside of the ocean, no matter how comfortable I was with it, when I come back to it, there's always that fear in the back of my head until I get comfortable with it again. You know, I'm hesitant. I'm worried, you know, the sharks or whatever that reason is. It's relatable to our professions and our hobbies and our passions too. If we're adamantly pursue something, we open Photoshop every day, we pick up our cameras and get out of the house and we get used to this, you put that down for a little while and you start to feel a little bit more intimidated about creating, or it doesn't feel as fluid or easy because it's not as natural and familiar. Mm-hmm. And if you've taken yourself out of photography for a while, just because you've had to focus on other things like surviving, then when you pick it up again, you start looking and seeing everything, it feels like everything's changed. You know, NFTs, people are doing that now. They're NFT artists. They're not photographers. Everything feels different. So you can feel like that's past you. And then somehow you need to catch up or you need to start doing that. And then it's suddenly there's all of this pressure is self-imposed, the need to pick up the camera, pressure that I need to get on this because I'm going to miss out on whatever this NFT thing is. You know, or even if you know it, it's fear, you know, the FOMO is going to happen. And what that does is it just applies pressure. And that inhibits creativity, you know? So it's not easy again, but what I'm doing is just sort of, you can call it going back to the drawing board or just applying the beginner's mind to say, well, what can I do now? And I'm going to lean on some of my strengths and then I'm going to work on some of my weaknesses. And I'm just going to kind of do stuff and come up with ideas until something else clicks, you know, something I haven't thought of, you know, borrow some experience from something else I've done. Or right now, actually I acquired a vintage camera collection. I hate showing how messy all this stuff is over here, but I have actually like hundreds of cameras and there's a Rolleiflexes and on the right, there are these old, you know, the Brownies and stuff. I have some like 8mm film cameras from the 60s and 70s. You know, even some really cool stuff like this is one that's ready to shoot with, that's been cleaned up, the Voigtlander Prominent, you know, like all these really cool things in film. So I'm kind of going back to that. Not that I'm going to say I'm going to shoot everything on film. Like I have a lot of ideas. I'm not sure what is going to be done first, but it's actually kind of looking back at history and just thinking about things differently, you know, rather than looking towards the future. I'm kind of thinking about the now. I'm trying to keep it right here and just kind of come up with ideas. Like if I hadn't been doing everything that I'm doing, would I still do it? You know, I've been home long enough. I have a daughter who I love to be around. You know, can I be gone for 11 months out of the year to keep exploring these ideas? Or is there something close to home? Or I'm asking myself these questions without applying pressure to the outcome. And I'm starting to come up with some interesting ideas and things that I might want to move forward on. And once they start to feel natural, they start to feel kind of fun. And then those intimidating things start to come into play. You know, if you just think I get into Instagram now and do all this stuff, or I'm going to, you know, start selling NFTs on Foundation. You start thinking about these other things. You're actually building it from a foundation rather than reverse engineering it, you know. For Instagram, we're telling a story backwards. We start with the photo and then we figure out how to tell the story. With NFTs, we're like, okay, how can I build stuff for NFTs so that I can sell it? You know, usually the best art and the best art that sells is stuff that kind of comes from the soul. We didn't usually have to apply this much technology to it in the past. So if you can come up with a foundation of something you love, then you'll start to connect the dots where, hey, this story, this project, this photography style, this thing, this might work for that rather than what can I make work for that? So you have to kind of take it back to that foundation phase, apply the technique is the beginner's mind, which is, you know, just assuming that you know nothing, which is, I get told I know nothing all the time. And I agree with it. I a daughter and a wife. So they constantly rag on me, but it goes as simple as saying, take the expectations off. Sure, if you have to shoot commercially, yeah, you can shoot commercially. But if you want to create something new, then create something new and don't conform to something you think you need to do because it's popular or something you've done before because you're comfortable with it. Apply some of what you've done and look for that thing that's just there. And if you start to feel like there's something there, like I feel this all the time, like I'm like, I like this, there's something there. I'm looking at these old cameras shooting with these, I'm like, man, this is just so cool. There's something there. And then I get all these ideas and eventually I get to that little thing. And what's funny about all these new ideas and these things that I do, it's never something so far out there. It's always this thing it just seems so obvious after you realize it. And and I think that's the nice thing about the beginner's mind and fresh eyes is you're like, you're not looking so far to do this thing that's so revolutionary. You're like, you just kind of come up with these ideas and then suddenly that's it. You know, it didn't have to be complicated. The people who win the Nobel Prize, you're like, I should have thought of that, or that $1 million idea. Like I should have thought of that. It's so simple. It doesn't have to be complicated, but you have to give yourself the, you know, the flexibility and the environment to be able to sort of play with those ideas. And that's kind of what we have time now. But the last thing I want to wrap up on it, it's hard right now because we've all been taking a break or doing something different or just doing the same thing in a different way. We have, technology has gone in a different direction. Everything's different. We're reading stories. 30% of the workforce in the United States is quitting and following their dreams, and people are changing their lives and transforming. And, you know, that's great. Like, I'm so happy for all those people, but that puts more pressure on us because now we're like, I need to transform. Like, I need to evolve. I need to take things to the next level. I need to do this because you feel like you're missing out on it and all these people are doing it. And you have to stop that. And you just have to say, nothing's really different. You know, I'm the same. I don't have to do all those things just because other people do. And when you start taking those expectations and those limitations or pressures off yourself, then you start to be creative again. So that's what you have to do. You have to just relieve all that pressure, step away from it for a second, take a deep breath, and just start creating stuff that you want to create, whether that's writing, drawing, photography, whatever it is. You just start creating and go into that space and you just start to connect all these dots with ideas. And that's where all this inspiration comes from. That's where all these great ideas come from. They just come from a place of, oh, I'm just going to screw around today and mess with stuff, you know, because it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like giving yourself, it sounds like you're saying give yourself permission to experiment or be experimental versus living under the pressure of perfection and professionalism and creating professional work? Why not just, hey, I'm just going to try this. I'm going to play around with this. I'm excited about this. And then once you do that enough, you see patterns in the chaos and you can start connecting the dots. And yeah.
Love and if it. It makes you feel better, if you look at my social media, you'll see that I might post once a month now. Like it's not like I've abandoned it, but I've gotten out of the mentality that I constantly have to talk about what I'm doing or all these things, yes. You know, so separating myself from that has been great. So there are certain things that you can do practically, to cut yourself off from certain things or remove it, you know, turn your phone off. Don't look at new, you know, all these things that you can do that will help, you know, do take some deep breaths or meditate in the morning. Just try to clear your head. These things are all valid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Love it. I always come away from these conversations with you jazzed and excited. I got a page full of notes of things to go look at. I got to look up that map tunneling tool you were talking about. We were talking about
you got to search map tunneling tool. It'll like say you pick one side and it shows you exactly. Because you know our parents were like, you can eventually dig a hole to China. Remember that? Like in the yard, like I'd be digging holes and like, you're going to dig a hole to China. And then, okay, I don't think China is actually under Florida.
It's kind of over there a little bit.
Yeah.
You might miss it. You might end up in the Marianas Trench or something. Right?
You know? Something like that. Yeah. I mean, it is in the middle of the ocean. Yeah. Actually. Yeah.
Who knows? Cool, man. All right. So if people want to like catch up with you, see what you're working on, you know, or check out the work that you've done already, what's a good location for them to point their browsers to?
Lately, it's just, you know, I'll share some things on social media. I haven't shared about any events or anything. My website needs to be updated. But I mean, if you're curious about anything in particular, just send me a message on you know, Facebook or any social media. I'll get it, or an email through the website. And then I'll update it, you know, once they're we have some ideas for later this season and next year that we'll be able to involve other people and bring people on board with projects and stuff. But right now, it's just the fun exploratory phase. And, you know, once I have more solidity to that, I'll start sharing about it and sort of crowdsourcing. So then you might start to see some of these sideline ideas that connect on social media.
I want to see those cameras. I want to see those vintage cameras that you have multiplying around you.
Yeah.
Those are amazing. Yeah. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I feel like whenever we talk, I feel like I've just watched or participated in a really good TED Talk. That's what it feels like, you know, just that you ever watch a TED Talk where you get these kind of revolutionary or eye-opening ideas. That's what it feels like when we chat. So thank you for doing
that. Oh no, it's a pleasure. It's fun. I mean, we should record the green room stuff next time.
We totally should have.
Every time it's like, we should talk about that and save it for the interview.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We were just, as we end this, I'll leave them with the, a glimpse into our green room conversation. We're talking about the storyline behind the Tomorrow War. And we'll leave it at that. Was it good?
I don't think
was
we said storyline. I don't even think we used that word. Just to give you an idea how
the soup that was Tomorrow War. The soup of ideas that was Tomorrow War.
One of those great movies where you think it's over and there's still an hour left.
What? That should have been the conclusion. All right, man. Well, I'll let you get on with it. You have a fantastic weekend. Thanks for doing this and chatting with me. This is fantastic. I'm excited. And I'll let you know when I book that next photography trip. I got a bunch of trips planned for different events, but most of them are either family or work. I'm committed to booking which I haven't really done ever, is just book a trip somewhere that I haven't been before explicitly for the sake of photography. So that's coming.
Yeah.
That's
let me coming. Know. It'd be good to go. But that's another thing too, like with us traveling everywhere by myself and I'm like, it'd just be easier to travel with somebody else. Cause then you like play off each other's creativity. You know, I could steal all your shots, for example, and make you do all the work.
Yes.
You know, the real reasons behind that, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. We should plan that. All right, man. Yeah. All right, you go enjoy that horrible Florida weather that you have to deal with. You know,
so, I will.
Yeah, you enjoy yourself. Cool, man. I'll be in touch, and thanks for everything. I appreciate you.
Yeah, take care. Thanks, everybody.
This is TWIP.
This episode was sponsored by MPB, the world's largest online platform for used photo and video kit. Visit MPB.com. www.safetyphotography.com.